Hello, Marvelites! You are listening to This Week in Marvel, episode number 576, and I'm Ryan Penagos, aka Agent M.
And I'm Agent of It's Almost Thanksgiving in like 3 weeks, and all I want to do is bake and sleep, Lorraine Sink.
Ooh, bacon sleep. I've been in the bacon sleep before. It's wonderful. We have a fun episode this week. And of course, there's lots to talk about if you are a fan of the MCU. We're going to get into all that because this is the official Marvel podcast where we talk about what's happening this week in Marvel, whether it's games, comics, movies, TV, or whatever the heck we're excited about.
Yeah, and this week we got a lot to be excited about because, of course, it's Marvel Studios Black Panther Wakanda Forever Week, and we have on some special guests. We're going to dissect the Marvel Universe with Jonah Loeb and Mark Sumerak, who are illustrator and co-writer of Marvel Anatomy, a scientific study of the superhuman. We'll get into that literally inside the bodies of some creatures here in a little bit. But before we get there, let's talk about the film that's on everybody's lips. Have you seen it yet? We're going to try not to spoil anything. Be cool. Don't spoil the movie. But Marvel Studios' Black Panther Wakanda Forever is out in theaters everywhere.
If you have gone, hope you went in costume or at least some Marvel shirts. Do something cool. Get excited. It's a celebration, you know, going to see a new Marvel Studios film. So it's really, really cool. Of course, once you see the film, I think is the best time to then start digging into everything around it. You can read articles about the cast, the creative team, lots of behind the scenes stuff, all kinds of details, reading lists that maybe you want to take, you know, characters and storylines a little bit further. We have all that stuff on Marvel.com for you to dig into, please, after you see the film.
And of course, if you haven't yet, go get your tickets and see the film only in theaters right now. And you want something to wear that's super cool. You want to wear it to your screening of the film, or maybe you're just like, now that I've seen the film, I need all the stuff. We've got all the stuff. Go over to marvel.com/must-haves and check out all of the cool stuff inspired by the film. There are Funkos. There's some really cool apparel from Actively Black, which if you guys listen to our episode with Lanny Smith, which is episode 574 from October 21st, we talk all about that with him. Lots of cool clothes there. There's bags from Loungefly. There's magic bands, you know, those cool little wristlets that you use at Disney parks, and lots more cool stuff. So go over to marvel.com/must-haves to check out all of the cool stuff that you must have.
Yes. And of course, once you see the movie, you'll be like, oh man, that soundtrack was so good. Everything about it was amazing. And thankfully, you can listen to the Marvel Studios Black Panther Wakanda Forever, music from and inspired by soundtrack, which is out now. It's produced by director Ryan Coogler, which is awesome. He's joined by the film's composer, Ludwig Göransson, Archie Davis, and Dave Jordan, and it features over 40 international artists that they put together. What's really cool is director Ryan Coogler was very, very involved in the project, including co-writing lyrics for Rihanna's lead single, Lift Me Up, which is amazing. We got some data that just came in through the wire here. Beep, 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 beep. It says that Lift Me Up became the most added song in U.S. radio history, amassing the most ever single day spins and the largest ever single day audience. Wow, that is amazing.
That's the power of Riri right there, baby, and Black Panther. Mm-hmm. Also, I want to shout out, you know, you mentioned Dave Jordan has tracks on here. Dave Jordan is the music supervisor for essentially all of the films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So every bop you have ever heard in a Marvel film is because Dave Jordan went out there and like got it into the film. I cannot express like what a talent this guy is and how much I want to just see his record collection.
Mm-hmm. Of course, as we said, you can experience Marvel Studios Black Panther Wakanda Forever in theaters right now. Go see it. We will hold off on doing our favorite moments from the film as our question of the week for just a little bit because we want to keep away from spoilers, but you know, you're probably going to see the movie a couple times in theaters. Think about your favorite moments and keep them in your back pocket. We're going to talk about them in a couple weeks.
And as always, if you see the film, try not to spoil it for other people.
Yeah.
Also in the Marvel Studios realm, there is a new special presentation, Marvel Studios special presentation, Director by Night, which is streaming now only on Disney+. Renowned composer Michael Giacchino made his directorial debut, of course, with Marvel Studios' Werewolf by Night, and now he's the subject of his very own special presentation, directed by his brother, who's a documentary filmmaker, Anthony Giacchino, and it chronicles their experience on Marvel Studios' Werewolf by Night as they journey into the small New Jersey town where they grew up to Hollywood and where they have now been winning Academy Awards in their respective films. And the special also features appearances with the cast, including Jack Russell actor Gael Garcia Bernal and Elsa Bloodstone herself, Laura Donnelly. Of course, if you haven't already, listen to our interview with actor Gael Garcia Bernal. You can listen to episode 574 from October 28th, just a couple weeks ago. And of course, if you want to check out that special presentation, go stream it right now only on Disney+. I love Michael Giacchino. He's just so fascinating, has such a phenomenal career as a composer, and I am obsessed with Marvel Studios' Werewolf by Night, so I will definitely be watching this.
Heck yeah. Now, something I want to do again is Marvel Day at Sea, and which is awesome because Marvel Day at Sea is returning to Disney Cruise Line in 2023. Marvel Day at Sea will take place across 9 5-night Caribbean cruises sailing from Miami in early 2023. And for the first time ever, there will be more than 30 superheroes and villains featured in the new Heroic Encounters. They're just growing it in amazing ways. There's something called Heroes Unite, which is a really cool nighttime spectacular featuring special effects, stunts, and pyrotechnics, which brings together like this great lineup of Marvel characters. You got time warping, multiverse spanning adventure. It'll culminate all of that in an epic battle with never before seen villains on a Disney Cruise Line ship. I can't wait for them to make it bigger and better and more spectacular. And then in the Walt Disney Theater aboard the cruise ships, there's Strange Academy, a spellbinding spectacular, which will keep families on the edge of their seats with demonstrations of the power of the mystic arts. The show will feature Doctor Strange, the powerful witch Agatha Harkness, and the first ever appearance of Sorcerer Supreme Wong. And then if you got some kiddos, young recruits will sharpen their superhero skills during an all-new interactive training experience with Captain America, Steve Rogers, Black Widow, Hawkeye, and Kate Bishop, which will be held on the upper decks and in the kids club. This is super cool. I want her to be just a little bit older to do this, but man, I'm going to throw her on that boat and we're going to have some fun.
Go learn more about all the stuff going on with Marvel Day at Sea over at marvel.com. And of course, you can check out the Disney Cruise Line's website as well. Lots of good stuff there, but also some good stuff coming with Marvel's Midnight Suns. The new video game coming in December has some prequel shorts, the second of which is Magic, A New Sun. And that is Magic, the character, and Sun, as in the sun in the sky. Just, you know, for clarity, if you're not reading this.
Yeah, no, that's helpful.
But of course, the Marvel's Midnight Suns prequel shorts are all a set of 5 different videos that provide backstory on how Lilith, the villain in the game, became the mother of demons, and how superheroes like Blade, Magic, Ghost Rider, and Nico Minoru have come together to form this young core of the Midnight Suns. Now, this second short here is available on Marvel.com and the Marvel's YouTube channel, all about Magic, aka Illyana's origins. Also, folks, pre-order Marvel's Midnight Suns, the all-new tactical RPG, coming to PC, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series X and S on December 2nd of this year. So soon, go get those pre-orders in so we can all play the game together. Yay.
When that comes out, Lorraine, you know what we're going to need? A fwee fwee fwee.
Fwee fwee fwee. Oh my God, I haven't fwee fwee fweed in so long.
I know.
We got to get it together.
I feel a lot better now that you have. Thank you. All right, let's talk about Marvel Contest of Champions because, of course, we are celebrating the release of Marvel Studios' Black Panther Wakanda Forever, and that's just flowing out into all kinds of things, including giving us some brand new characters in Marvel Contest of Champions. Shuri and Atuma have joined the game, and with the World Eaters bearing down on Wakanda and the rest of the Battle Realm, Princess Shuri will do what she must to protect her people, even if that means turning to Talokan for aid. But not all of Namor's people are on board, and the deadly Atuma has set his sights on these new arrivals. Now Shuri and the Summoner must fight to save both their homes from becoming lost in a sea of troubles. Download Marvel Contest of Champions on iOS and Android mobile devices today. Man, they just keep adding cool stuff. Very, very cool.
All right, we got more good stuff coming down for comics. Of course, Fantastic Four number one is now on sale, written by friend of the show and friend of us, Ryan North, with art by Ivan Coelho. And here's just like a little taste of what is to come in this new series. Super excited for it. Something has gone terribly wrong in New York, and the Thing and Alicia are traveling across America to escape it. But when they stop in a small town for the night and wake up in the morning before they've arrived, they find themselves caught in a time loop that's going on since they were born. It's been going on since they were born. It's been going on since they were born. It's been, you get it, right? Because it's like a time loop. All right. So pick that up at your local comic shop right now. Go get it. We love a launch of a big new series like this. And Ryan North is just one of the best in the biz and one of the nicest. So go pick it up.
Yeah. We also have to talk about Invincible Iron Man number one, the brand new Iron Man series that is coming December 14th. It is written by Jerry Duggan with art by Juan Fregeri and Brian Valenza. And we have a brand new trailer for the series. It gives a little bit of a tease, a little bit of a taste about Tony Stark overcoming some bitter defeats, how he's lost everything, his wealth, his fame, even his friends. And then assassins are coming for him and he's got to, like, you know, pull his little pants up and get going. So you can go check out the trailer of him.
It's such a weird way of saying, I know what you mean, but I feel like what you're trying to say is like put on his big boy pants.
Nope,
but
he's pulling up his little pants.
Put on his little pants. Wow. Well, definitely looking forward to that. And of course, go check out the trailer on Marvel.com. Also, another number one coming on the 14th of December, Monica Rambeau, Photon number one. It's a limited series, 1 of 5. I love me some Monica Rambeau anything. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be even better because it's by Eve Ewing with art by Ivan Fiorelli and Luca Maresca. And Monica is paying a visit to the Sanctum Sanctorum on behalf of S.W.O.R.D., who has charged her with making a very special cosmic delivery. However, in true superhero fashion, not everything is as it seems. Monica ends up on a new adventure with some very high personal stakes, some family drama. Love to see it. Super excited for this series. Go put it on your pull list or check out some preview art over on Marvel.com. We love our Monica Rambeau. I cannot wait for more Monica Rambeau just out in the zeitgeist.
Yeah, she's also in Thunderbolts right now. She's in next week's issue of Wakanda. Monica everywhere, everybody. It's mm-hmm. a good time. Let's talk a little bit more about comics because that's what I do over on Marvel's Pull List podcast, where we talk about all the comics that come out every week. We do deep dive conversations and more. This week, our favorite picks, the books that got us most excited were Sabretooth and the Exiles number one, Captain America, Sentinel of Liberty number six, and the aforementioned Fantastic Four number one. Man, that's such a good book. We are going to have Ryan North on Marvel's Pull List in the next couple of weeks to talk about a classic Fantastic Four story and his current run on the series. And Ryan is just, he's just the best. The book is so good, man. Just tremendous. Anyway, for this week's Reading Club, we are joined by author Kara Mahorn to talk about the comic book series. It's a three-part arc, Black Panther Wakanda Forever, from just a couple years ago. There's an X-Men tie-in, Spider-Man, and Avengers. It's really great. And we also talk about her new book, Black Panther Protectors of Wakanda, a history and training manual of the Dora Milaje from the Marvel Universe, which rules. It's super cool. I was having another conversation with another writer for a different Black Panther book, and they had their copy of Karama's book on the side of them. It's just, it's really, really cool. We're going to talk a lot about Black Panther books here on the show very soon. But for now, go check out Marvel's Pull List on SiriusXM, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, Karama rocks. So she that's does. Super awesome. We also have some other great podcasts from Marvel coming out this week. We have the Women of Marvel podcast hosted by our pals Angelique Roche, Judy Stevens, and Ellie Pyle. And this season is all about the power of mentorship. It's been really cool seeing this podcast come together this season. The first episode came out last week, and it's an exclusive recording of the live Women of Marvel panel from New York Comic Con. Highly recommend. And if you ever are at a Comic Con, either New York or San Diego, definitely come to the Women of Marvel panel. It is one of my favorite things at any convention, besides, of course, the This Week in Marvel panel, because I'm there. And the second episode of the podcast is out now, and it is all about the Wasps, Janet and Nadia Van Dyne. Ellie Pyle talks to writer Sam Maggs, lovely human being who I just adore, as well as editor Alana Smith, another wonderful woman that I adore, about the sweet and supportive relationship between the two Wasps. Listen to that episode now. You can listen to the podcast on SiriusXM, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, with new episodes coming out on Thursdays. So look out for those.
All right, one more podcast for all of you to stick in your freaking ears, and it's a good one. It's Marvel's Wastelanders Doom, and we are rounding the corner to the end of this part of the Marvel's Wastelander multi-part audio epic scripted podcast from Marvel Entertainment and SiriusXM. The 10th and final episode is now available. See, I was just saying that. To subscribers to Marvel Podcasts Unlimited on Apple Podcasts and the SiriusXM app. Let's hear a little bit from the episode right now.
Is that all you wished for? To double in size?
I wish to become the most powerful being on Earth. You're not gonna like what I'm going to do to you.
The coma cannon would appear to be highly effective. Why is your heart rate faster than normal?
Because of jubilation. For I have obtained what I have been searching for.
The cosmic cube?
More than that. Complete power. To change reality from what it is to what it ought to be.
Of course, you can subscribe to SiriusXM app or Marvel Podcasts Unlimited on Apple Podcasts to hear episodes of Marvel's Wastelanders 1 week early. And subscribing to Marvel Podcasts Unlimited will also unlock exclusive bonus content. You want it all? You can have it all.
As we start looking for holiday gifts, a subscription to SiriusXM and or Apple Podcasts Unlimited on Apple Podcasts hooks you up with all of our premium podcast content. So just saying, that sounds like a pretty good gift. And also, if you haven't listened to the Marvel's Wastelander series yet, it's a huge series, multi-part, lots of episodes. If you're looking for something to do over the holidays to make things warm and bright and full of dystopian future, baby, that's it. Go put in those headphones. There's nothing to do outside. It's cold out there. But now we got to listen to an interview. Ryan.
Yes.
I wasn't there for this one, but I have read the book and it freaking rocks. Tell me all about what's to come.
Yes. So we are talking about Marvel Anatomy, a scientific study of the superhuman. And I was joined by illustrator Jonah Loeb and writer Mark Sumerak. Mark, you may know from a ton of stuff he's done for Marvel. He's been on staff. He's been an editor. He's written a million comics. He's written the Franklin Richards Son of a Genius books alongside our pal Chris Eliopoulos. He's written for tons of games and more. And so Mark is like the perfect person for this. And Jonah Loeb is absolutely superhuman in the way he can depict nasty, weird insides, cool anatomy bits and pieces. So we talked about this book that does break down anatomy of Marvel characters. There's even some items in it. There's a lot of like physiology and just cool science in it, but developed in a way that doesn't make you like break your brain if you're not a science head. It's really cool. It is interspersed with commentary by T'Challa and Shuri. There's a story in this that the Skrulls are sort of infiltrating Earth. And of course, the people who are most able to deal with it are Wakandans, T'Challa and Shuri. And they're looking at the physiology and the anatomy of superheroes of different galactic races and more to understand how they could infiltrate. And so it's really cool going through all that and talking about it with Jonah and Mark. We here on the show absolutely love it. I've talked about it vociferously on social media. So let's stop me yammering on and get to me yammering on with Jonah and Mark right now. I am joined by two of the creators of Marvel Anatomy, a scientific study of the superhuman, one of the writers, Mark Sumerak. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Ryan.
And illustrator Jonah Loeb. Hello, Jonah.
Hello. Hello. How you doing?
I am great. I freaking love this book. I want to take this and shake it in front of people's faces and be like, this is a book everyone should have. And I say that completely earnestly and truthfully. I've known a lot of people who have become Marvel fans in a lot of ways through, like, we have like encyclopedias, the Marvel Encyclopedia, or like handbooks or things like that. Marvel Anatomy is like that, but it's through like a beautiful, cool story with the most gorgeous art in the world. So I'm so excited to talk to both of you about it. But before we get into the book, I need to know your Marvel origin story. Jonah, please tell me your Marvel origin story. How'd you first become a fan or even hear about the characters?
Wow. It's amazing how far you have to reach back to get that. It's ironic that I ended up in comics, illustration, and video games because my parents generally did not purchase video games or comic books for me. So I was at the mercy of whoever would give me something cool on my birthday. And I remember randomly ending up with a copy of Spirits of Vengeance, which is an old run. It had Venom and Ghost Rider and Blaze. I just got two of them. So I didn't have the complete story at all. But the illustration, and I believe the illustrator was like Andy Kubert or something.
It was Adam Kubert. I think Andy might have also done some work on there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, it blew my fragile little mind. I mean, just seeing Ghost Rider in his full Ghost Rider glory, seeing Venom with those teeth going everywhere. I kind of had never seen anything quite so rock and roll. And I instantly fell in love with both of those heroes or villains, depending on what side they're on, kind of instantly. And everything else came along with that. So I've always been attracted to the monstrous, you know? And so those are some of the more monstrous heroes you can get.
Yeah, I totally understand that. It was actually Adam and Andy were two of the artists on there. Mark, what about you?
You know, for me, I came into comics in the early 80s when licensed books were abundant from Marvel. So my real gateway in were books like Star Wars and Transformers and G.I. Joe, because I had the toys at home and then I found out there were comics that featured these characters that furthered their stories, and that made me really excited. So I rushed out to find those on the local newsstand and eventually led me to discovering all of the other comics that Marvel published through house ads and through whatever was on the spinner rack at the time. And from that day forward, for the next 40 years or so, I haven't had a comic, you know, a day where a comic wasn't in my hands. Eventually led to me being an editor at Marvel, and then went on to be a writer for the last two decades or so.
God bless you. I'm a huge Transformers fan. Also was a huge G.I. Joe fan growing up, but Transformers has come back into my life a little bit. Okay, so we'll get into Marvel Anatomy a bit right now. In your guys' words, what is Marvel Anatomy, a scientific study of the superhuman? Mark, why don't you start us off?
Well, the title really says it all. It is a deep look beneath the skin of the superhuman characters within the Marvel Universe. It is T'Challa, the King of Wakanda, looking at a potential threat that could be dire to the world and finding a way to identify the superheroes he can trust. And by doing so, he has to look really deep into their physiology to make sure that they are indeed who they say they are. And that's kind of the storyline behind the book, and it gives us the opportunity to delve into the physical origins of the powers shared by all of these characters. From characters with cosmic origins and alien origins to characters with scientific and technological origins, we try to cover them all and show what makes them tick on an anatomical level, not just what causes them to go out and fight the good fight.
Jonah, from your POV?
I mean, it's hard to beat the writer at his own game. But I certainly, to me, when I think about what Marvel Anatomy is, I think back to my childhood and thinking back to periods where I would stare through books with all these informations and all these pictures and just wonder at it. You know, maybe I couldn't understand all the words or I didn't understand all the concepts, but just looking at these things, getting lost in them, really carried me away. And so to me, Marvel Anatomy is a tome. It is a compendium of all the information that you could want to know about these 60 plus heroes and villains, because I think a lot of kids spend a lot of time wondering, how do they do what they do? Not, you know, it's cool that they can, but, you know, with things like mutants and things like that, you know, very little of it is explained with it's just magic. No, there's a reason. There's a mechanic behind it all. And so I think it's exactly the kind of thing that I would have wanted when I was a kid, just to get lost in.
Yeah, I agree. It's all that. And like the fact that it is wrapped up in a cool story, and you bring in the voices of T'Challa and Shuri and give it a perspective. It's not, I want to make sure our listeners understand, it's not like a clinical textbook. There is humor in here. There's heart in here. There is the Marvel Universe is wrapped up in this in every single way. And I think that's what sort of differentiates this in a lot of ways from, you know, what could have been like, just look at this freaking cool art. It's awesome. And here's how this goes. There's story, and there's a lot of like thought put behind this. And so how did the two of you actually become involved in this project? Jonah, how'd you get looped in as the artist here?
I was very lucky to have been looped in on this project. I think I gained my notoriety online and kind of my presence online because of my work on games like Skyrim and Fallout, as well as other kind of work I'd done on Twitch or what have you. And I think that gave me enough online presence to be noticed by the publisher. And I think my work was just uniquely weird enough that maybe I was considered for the job. I think also for most of my career, I've been doing creature design, which means that I spend a lot of time looking at human anatomy, animal anatomy, and combining them in unique, interesting ways. And so I think I've done a lot of thinking about bones and muscle and all those things over the course of my career. And being able to apply that to Marvel superheroes and villains is like an incredibly unique experience and such a challenge. And so I was noticed because of my online presence, I think, by the publisher. And he just reached out to me and they sent me the manuscript to see if I was interested. And it was just so completely unique and allowed for so much creative freedom. I just could not resist. And of course, and the manuscript they provided, of course, was written by Mark and his colleague. And just pouring through it, my mind was just effervescing with ideas. So I couldn't resist. I had to do it.
Yeah. Mark, you mentioned to our listeners, you know, 20 years, more than that, even at Marvel as a whole. How'd this project come to you?
You know, I was working with Insight Edition, the publisher of this book, on a number of projects, and was fortunate enough that when the idea for this started to spawn within the mind of the editor that we were working with, Chris Prince, I was working on a bunch of projects with him, and he mentioned it to me offhand and said, is this something you might be interested in down the road? Now, this was maybe 5 years ago or so, and I put out there, of course, you know, this would be a dream job. This would be wonderful to work on. And as things eventually developed, it turned out that I did get that opportunity. I had been working on a number of source books and guidebooks and technical manuals and all sorts of other in-world type of writing for these vast universes like Marvel and Star Wars. And so I had the chance to apply my long-term knowledge as a Marvel writer and my love of these characters into the types of books that I really enjoy working on, which are these vast manuals that explore them on a much deeper level. I grew up reading those Marvel handbooks, you know, that Mark Gruenwald put out that were just, you know, a love letter to each and every one of these characters. And so getting to approach that same kind of material, but from an exciting new angle, was such an honor.
It's pretty cool. And, you know, y'all mentioned there's a ton of illustrations in here, a ton of characters, over 60 characters. Plus, there's some items in here and even digging into some like full species, Skrulls and Kree and stuff. How did we come to lock in those 60? Mark, was it something that you said, here's who I think needs to be in here? Was it a Marvel, an Insight decision? Where did that come from?
I think it was a little bit of give and take. You know, we made up a blue sky kind of list at the very beginning of the characters that we would love to have in there. And then being realistic about the number of drawings that could get done and the number of pages we had, because this could be a 10,000 page book if we wanted it to be. I mean, certainly there are enough characters in the Marvel Universe, and I will always regret not having a Dark Hawk spread in there. But you can't do everyone. And so narrowing it down and picking the ones that were the most visually exciting and the most anatomically exciting, but also the ones that would have the biggest fan appeal. You know, there is a certain amount of, you know, there may be a character out there who has very interesting anatomy, but that most people aren't going to recognize, and they're probably not going to make the cut. So it was a balance of popularity for character, but also unique physiology and making sure that they'd be an interesting visual display. You know, there are plenty of mutants on Krakoa, but a lot of them look like basic humans. And despite how their powers may develop, you know, Magneto doesn't look that different from Charles Xavier in terms of physiology. So we had to pick and choose the ones that really would stand out and give us a popping visual as well as great information about how their powers work.
Jonah, did you see this list and be like, look, I gotta draw MODOK. I gotta give him those big, beautiful eyebrows. Were there any characters in here you were like, can we add this? Or were you just like, yes, let's get going?
Yeah, it was so many. Most of the characters of these 60 get more than one spread, right? For a while, actually, they even had it limited so that some characters had to share a page opposite another hero. And the first thing I did is I said, no. Every one of these is somebody's favorite, and we cannot possibly crunch this down. Like, that doesn't seem fair. There was also kind of when we were trying to figure out the scope of the project, and I kind of had the buy-in on Insight's point of view, you know, they wanted to work with me, and they kind of, we were trying to figure out the scope, and I just kind of immediately said, I understand that this is way more work for me, but I think the value and gold of a project like this is that you find them all in one place. So I basically kind of fought to keep them all in, because characters like MODOK, oh my goodness, they have to be in there. And other characters, you know, that just are classics, they all have to be in there. And for everyone you leave out, the manuscript becomes poorer. So I kept as many as I could in there, even though it meant putting backbreaking work on myself. Yeah, there's always going to be ones that you wish were in there, because as Mark says, there's so many heroes to choose from. But I'm pretty happy with the selection that Mark and the team came up with.
I will say, Jonah, that there is one or two characters that got only a shared spread, but it's mostly out of T'Challa's disdain for them.
Yes,
and
yes,
one of them is Howard the Duck.
Yes.
It's simply because T'Challa wants nothing to do with him. And so he gets half a spread.
You can feel that in the writing, too. You can feel that disdain come through. He's like, what is this guy? We're writing a note for him, but like, who cares? He's a duck.
If Mark could have had his druthers and gotten Darkhawk in there, Jonah, was there one character that you wish you could have drawn and dissected, as it were?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number. The first one that came to mind, I was kind of like, you know, like, why isn't Apocalypse in here? Just because I love the way Apocalypse is drawn in the comics. He's got this weird infusion of, is it jewelry? Is it tech, you know, into his body? I would have loved to get to work on him. He just, you know, talk about like a boss level character, you know?
For sure. Honestly, there's so much in here from an informational perspective, but a knowledge perspective. What's the research like for this project? Mark, are you a secret scientist? Have you been studying anatomy and gotten some crazy degree that I did not know about in the last couple of years? How did you figure out all the anatomic ins and outs for this?
Well, I did earn my PhD in biophysics from... No, I did not.
I would believe you. You know, you're so nice, I would believe you.
a lot of it is just being immersed in this lore for as long as I have and having studied these handbooks since I was a wee child, you know, and knowing how these characters work and what they physically can and can't do. Back when I was an editor at Marvel, that was one of the things we had to know, was what can these characters actually do and what can't they do? And the physicality of it all is an important part of that. Knowing what their limits are, knowing what their bounds are, knowing how their powers do and don't work, knowing that Spider-Man's spider sense is an early warning detection system, but isn't going to be triggered by certain things that wouldn't be considered a danger to him. Those types of understandings of how the internal mechanisms of these characters work are just kind of inherent in us, but it also went side by side with digging deeper into the scientific aspects of it, because certainly, as you said, I do not have a degree in biophysics or anything of the sort. And so it was, you know, if we were writing about Jean Grey, and I would suddenly, you know, start going online and pulling up medical journals and theories about how telepathy could work in the real world based on how the human brain functions. And so it was about finding out, you know, how do these theoretical powers within this universe, how could they apply in the real world, and bringing those aspects together. So how much electricity can a human cell safely store inside of itself, and how can we show that in Storm that is exceeded by her cellular structure? And those are the types of things, you know, that we had to define in the real world and then expand in the Marvel universe.
That's cool. I was going through this and it made me reminisce and think about the work of Elliot R. Brown. He did a lot of work in the handbooks and some trading cards and various things throughout the 80s and 90s and cutaways and build pieces. And it's so cool. Did you reference any of that or have that like in mind as you were going through some of these pieces?
Yeah, a lot of it. I was really impressed with a lot of the thought that goes into these diagrams. They're both brilliantly retro and then also very well thought out, especially given the tech of the time. So there is pretty spectacular. It's funny because I didn't know the name Elliot R. Brown. I had happened upon this gold mine of sources, and now you're saying that, and I'm like, yep, this is the guy. I'm looking at this. It's pretty amazing. And in some cases, there were some instances where, you know, modern tech had exceeded this, and I had to kind of come up with slightly different methods. But I will say, for some aspects, I kind of just looked at his work and was like, this is basically as close to canon as I'm going to get. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
And two great examples of that in the book are Cyclops' visor and also Spider-Man's web shooter. Jonah did an amazing job of taking those original diagrams and designs and boosting it up to a new level, adding his own flair, but keeping it consistent with what we've seen before in those technical specs. And it really just shines on the page.
Yeah, yeah, thank you.
They really do.
I think the soul of a thing matters a great deal, you know, and whether or not the original concept work is outdated in, you know, whether it was the limits of the artist or the limits of the vision of the time, whatever, I think it's kind of imperative that if you're going to create a sequel on a thing or the next vision of a thing, you really have to put a lot of time into honoring that which came before. And especially with a canon like Marvel's, because people love this stuff. These stories have been going on for a long time. And so it was a pleasure doing a 2.0 or a 3.0 on some of these.
Yeah. When I was going through the book, I was reading things and being like, man, there are pieces here I very specifically know from my many years, but there are pieces also that felt like you guys were able to create anew, that you were bringing to the canon. Is that the case? Or was it literally, Mark, because you have a galactic brain for all this stuff, you were able to pull all the facts from everywhere and it was all just there and you put it in one place?
You know, Marvel writers have always been great at trying to answer the question how. You know, when we present something awesome on the page, so many of the writers that came before us did a really amazing job of trying to show us how it worked. And so there was a lot of cross-referencing to be done in the research. But also there were plenty of times where we had an open door to be able to look at it and say, okay, we know that this thing exists in the Marvel Universe, but we've never seen the process. We've never seen exactly how it's done and why it works. And we had that little bit of wiggle room to go in there and explore that further. And one great example is we talk about the adamantium bonding process in the book of Wolverine's bones. And so I detailed what we knew of the process and how it works in the text. And then Jonah went in and illustrated like a step-by-step infusion process that shows how the bone is permeated by the adamantium. And it's nothing we've ever really seen before. You know, we've seen the Wolverine in the tank. We've seen the adamantium start to pump. We've seen him stand up screaming with claws. And we never see what's going on inside of the bone. And this is our first look at that. And there are several instances in the book where we got to go in and kind of define what a process was or a reason was, something that where you knew a character could do something, but it had never really been fully explained how in the past. And we had the room to play with that, which was really nice.
Yeah, I concur. There was another fun example of that was Iron Man's Extremis armor. You know, we talk about the nanites that, you know, they hide in vacuoles in his bones. And then when he needs them, they come pouring out and they assemble on top of him. It was an incredible opportunity to literally invent what an Iron Man nanite looks like. And I referenced basically a blood cell, just a round oval thing that could then split apart, you know, like the Sentinels in Matrix or something, you know, to all their little tools and component parts. And that was a great opportunity to use the manuscript and the research that Mark had made to then visually invent on top of that. And then Mark kind of, you came in afterwards and started defining in the captions everything that was going on. And it came together really beautifully, the synergy between the art and the writing in an instance like that.
Yeah, you guys have kind of answered what I was going to ask next, which is, you know, so the favorite things you learned or helped to establish in this. If there are other examples, I would love to hear them. But for me, as I was going through it, I guess it never occurred to me, but seeing the visualization of Ben Grimm, aka the Thing's hand, and then the bones and the pinky and the ring finger having fused, and that's why he's drawn with only four fingers. I was like, that to me was like a head exploding moment. I was like, that looks so cool. But it's like, okay, yeah, I get it now. I have no more questions. That's great. Or even early on in the book, when we see the Skrulls, there's a little illustration of a Skrull fetus. And it's like, Skrull fetuses have tails when they're in the embryo, but then it just absorbs in their body. I was like, that's awful. I love it. It's one of the two little things that I absolutely adored finding out about it in this book. What about anything else for you, Jonah?
I definitely think it's the little details of a thing that sell it. So like the reptile, the little, you know, they're reptilian species.
Yeah.
And so the little reptile tail. For me, one of the most fun ones to kind of visually invent in that manner and to kind of come up with a good reason for was seeing Jocasta. Because when I first looked her up and I was looking at these images of Jocasta, I said, what's up with the metal hair? How can she turn her head? You know, she must make clanging noises every time she does it. And I thought, you know, why would you invent a robot with metal hair? And then I started reading more of the manuscript and realizing that she has incredible, an array of sensors, and she has an incredible processing power and all these things. And so I thought, well, what if it's not hair? what if it's an extension of her brain and sensory kind of organs? And so I got to draw a really, really fun, it's one of my favorite pictures of the book. I referenced Soviet era equipment and monitoring equipment and that kind of thing to come up with a unique look of all the sensors and mics, et cetera, in her brain, and then come up with a unique brain shape for her. And so it was just one of those great open opportunities where I saw an opening, and just like Mark mentioned, we just wriggled through it, you know, and made it, you know, it's not a bug, it's a feature, as we say in games. So,
Mark, what about you?
For me, one of the ones that I really loved was Man-Thing, or Ted, as fans of Werewolf by Night would call him.
Yeah.
Man-Thing, you know, there's this great spread where we first introduce him in the book, and we get to see kind of his internal biome, all the different bits of swamp matter that have been absorbed into him and how his root-like body and interior functions. But then on the second spread with Man-Thing, there's my favorite part, which is the look at his remaining nervous system and the glands that cause people to burn at his touch. Because it's always been, you know, those who know fear burn at the touch of the Man-Thing. But here's the physical reason why. And it shows how his brain connects to those nerves, that senses the emotions, releases these chemicals from these glands that then flow through his fingertips. And you're basically looking at this disembodied nervous system for this giant swamp monster. And it all kind of makes sense on how the flow works and why people spontaneously combust in his presence. And it's pretty wild. So getting to see that defined was a real highlight for me.
Yeah. There's a bit with Red Hulk, too, where it's like, oh, he secretes this oil. And then when his temperature gets so high, he just... You know, like that causes that to combust. I was like, oh, great. Yeah. You solved that one for me. Thank you, guys. Yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff like that.
He's that really beefy guy on the basketball court who takes his shirt off in the first, you know, the first round. And then it's just like, then you don't want to get up close to him because he's just always greasy all the time. So, yeah.
Obviously, you know, thinking about just preparation for this, we talked about research, but just what prepares either of you for doing this, aside from, I guess, your years of knowledge? You know, Jonah, did you do a lot of specific anatomy work? Obviously, character designs and things like that, that takes a lot of understanding of musculature and bone structure and stuff, even when you're kind of creating creatures. Was there any other things that helped prepare you?
Certainly. I think a book like this necessitated so much research. And so I definitely picked up a couple books. I picked up a book, it's like an atlas of weight training. So it just shows you different weight training exercises you can do. And it shows you the muscles and what the muscle fibers are doing. So something like that was very helpful. But then for a much larger perspective on the human body, I got the Frank Netter's Atlas of Human Anatomy. And that has everything you could possibly want or not want to look at when it came to human anatomy. And this is the manual that basically every doctor and dentist and all that use. And in terms of being able to, you know, I mentioned before that being able to sell an idea comes down to illustrating the specifics of it. And often those specifics sell you on the idea specifically because they're unexpected. Well, being able to reference real pictures of real human anatomy or real illustrations of that gave me all kinds of little details that I could just riff on and include. And because they're so unusual and because they're unexpected, they strike the reader as completely, completely believable. So often Mark would use a touchstone word to describe a part of the brain, for instance. And all I had to do was look up in the back of the book, flip to that page in the anatomy book, and suddenly I had an idea of the shape, the look, the location. And then I can just take that and just go. And then in certain other circumstances, when it came to designing tech or that kind of thing, there's just endless things to look at online. As I mentioned with Jocasta, using Soviet era surveillance equipment to like look at all that stuff to create a unique visual language for her kind of robotics, as opposed to the mechanical bits you'd see on Ultron, as opposed to the mechanical bits you'd see on Vision, you know, creating a different visual language for each definitely necessitated research.
Mark, were there any characters you hadn't previously touched in one way, shape, or form in this book?
You know, thank goodness, not really.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I can't imagine. You know,
most of them were ones that I had worked on in some capacity, even if small, over the years. I think maybe there were, you know, one or two characters who I just simply had an awareness of and hadn't necessarily worked on. I think, you know, there are some inhuman characters in there that may not have made it into my docket over the years. But overall, I had a really strong working knowledge of the characters. But what I think, you know, going off of what Jonah said was really interesting to me about this project was, you know, when you read a handbook it's usually a very nice character shot, a hero shot of the character in costume, and a lot of technical information in big chunks of text. And there's nothing wrong with that. I love those handbooks. I love the trading cards. I love all those fact-based items out there that tell you all about these characters. But this was the first time that we could say all those things and then also show them at the same time in unique ways. You know, we could talk about how flexible, you know, Nightcrawler was and then show you his skeletal system and what's within his tail and how his fingers work and, you know, all of those and how light reflects off of his skin. Things that were just words on the page before are now amplified into microscopic, you know, detail. And that was so fascinating to me. And the way Jonah brought that to life on the page, you know, took these key phrases, took these long established physical traits and just showed them in a way that has never been showed before, specifically in one of these projects, was really unique and special, in my opinion.
I want to give a shout out to Salim Busuru, who is an artist I worked with, subcontracted with on this piece. This is obviously, as Mark pointed out, this is from T'Challa. This is from Black Panther. And so it was imperative to me that the book feel like a Wakandan book that was written that kind of takes this entire perspective of a Wakandan perspective. And so to really get that across, I found this guy Salim on social media, and he just crushed it with the art. So you see little design elements throughout, and the chapter illustrations themselves are unique Wakandan-style masks that often reference, almost always actually, reference specific characters in that chapter. And so they're kind of sprinkled throughout, but I hope that people take just as long or longer on those pieces, because I think he just completely nailed it.
And I think we would be remiss not to mention Dan Wallace, my co-author, and our editor, Chris Prince, who was the one who brought Jonah and our team together to create this. And it was kind of his idea from the start. And hopefully we did him proud in the way we brought it all together.
Yes. Chris was fantastic.
Yeah. You know, as I said at the top of this, this is a book I just want to shake in front of people's faces and get them to check it out. It's a huge book. Like, physically, it's a very large book. It is a coffee table possibly, unless you are like Mark and myself and have toddlers around. I am not putting this anywhere near my 3-year-old or Mark's 3.5-year-old, because like the cover to this is beautiful. It's got these raised areas for some of the illustrations in here, and it's really something special. It's big, and it's one of those books. I hope that a lot of folks check this out for the holiday season. Is there anyone else you want to make sure people check this out? Anyone specific you say, you need to read this book?
Well, I think that it's meant for everybody. If you're a fan of the comics, if these are the characters that you love, then this is a great book to explore what makes them tick. I think it really delves deep into the Marvel Universe in a way that's never been done before and is a great companion to so many of those other wonderful source books out there. And like you said, Ryan, it's great for the coffee table. I wouldn't recommend it for the dinner table because it can get pretty gruesome. But it is something that I think should be on anybody who loves these characters or longs to draw these characters someday should have this on their shelf.
I agree. I think the manuscript and the whole concept of it, including, as you mentioned, the kind of quite deluxe presentation and printing job, was kind of explained to me as basically this is a product that is aimed at an older, kind of more informed Marvel audience. But with that said, again, kind of bringing back to where we started off, it's the kind of book that I wish that I'd had when I was little, even when I would be pouring through it and half of it would be going over my head. I think this really could go to all ages. So if there's somebody in their 50s, 40s, 30s, it's for them. If there's somebody in their teens, it's for them. I tried to pour my passion into this and my interest into this. And I tried to make it so that the illustrations, as well as Mark's fantastic text, really pique the imagination in a big way. And so that I'm a big believer in that kind of work being available to everybody.
Amen. Well said, gentlemen. All right, everybody, go pick up Marvel Anatomy, A Scientific Study of the Superhuman, out now from Inside Editions, wherever books are sold. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Jonah.
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks, Ryan.
Take care.
Great interview. Everybody go check out the book. Go pick up Marvel Anatomy, a scientific study of the superhuman, wherever you get your books. Also, shout out to co-writer of the book, Daniel Wallace, who worked with Mark on the book, who was not in the interview today, but also a big part of creating that book.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this book is a great way to like win arguments. Well, actually, the physiology.
By hitting someone with it, it's a giant, heavy book.
Also that. But next week, we're going to have on some more wonderful writers and artists, Frederick Joseph, writer, and Nicholas Smith, illustrator of The Courage to Dream, which is a book inspired by Marvel Studios' Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. It's just the sweetest, wonderfulest, bestest book. We both really enjoyed reading it, and I really enjoyed talking with both of these guys about the book. It's just a delight.
And we don't want to go into spoiler territory for Marvel Studios' Black Panther, Wakanda Forever just yet, but I'm sure everyone out there, you're seeing the movie, you're going to listen to the soundtrack. What's your favorite track off of Marvel Studios' Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, music from and inspired by the film? Is it Rihanna's track? Is it something else? Is it one of the pieces of score? Let us know, because it's a good one. You know, for me, I remember that trailer that has No Woman, No Cry by Thames on there. I would just listen to that over and over again. I think that was such a great marriage of music and the feeling of the film and the scenes we got there. And I think that's what they're doing so well with the soundtrack.
Also, obviously, any Riri track is great. It is not lost on me how cool it is that Rihanna, aka Riri, has done a track for a film that introduces Riri Williams, a character whose name was inspired by Rihanna. It's just like a wonderful little trick of the world. It's so wonderful. Brings me great joy. But of course, you can tweet us your answers of your favorite track using the hashtag ThisWeekInMarvel. Email them to twimpodcast@marvel.com, or you can send us a message on our Facebook page at facebook.com/ThisWeekInMarvel. And of course, as always, tell us if it's okay to read on the show so we can do that in our community section like we like to do right now.
Yeah. All right. The question of the week last week was, who is your favorite Wakandan character? So we got a bunch of great answers. First up was Not Jason Todd at Not Jason Todd, who says, the myth, the legend, the big brain Shuri, one of the coolest characters. Please give her a comic run. Well, Not Jason Todd, I hope you weren't hit in the head with a crowbar by a sadistic clown, because Shuri did have a great comic book series, and she's been in a ton of great series over the years. So go check those out.
Highly recommend Female of the Species or the Shuri series. Mm-hmm. Both are fabulous. We have Emery Hunkel at Scarlet Emery, who says, T'Challa, of course.
I mean, come on. Chico Sun at Eli the Dread said, T'Challa. Why T'Challa? Because he defines what Black Panther is. He is king. He is an Avenger.
Gotta love it. Mm-hmm. Ritkish K. Mondel says, T'Challa. He was a great man, a true king, and the leader of his people. Miss Chadwick so much. He was the perfect casting for the role.
Mm-hmm. Olivia Balch at Olivia_8012 says, my favorite character from Wakanda is Okoye. She's fiercely loyal and has the best jokes.
I love Okoye. She's just such a badass.
So good.
Also, Danai Gurira as Okoye is one of the greatest things. She's also one of the kindest people in my brief interactions with her. Just so unbelievably generous of spirit.
I still think of that moment at the very end of Marvel Studios' Avengers Infinity War when the snap has just happened and T'Challa comes. He's like, get up, General. And her reaction as he is snapped away, and just the little bit that she does there is so much and so devastating. Oh.
So good. All right. We've got Rishon at Queen of the TWDU, who says, General Okoye, the one who protected Wakanda during the blip and would do anything for Wakanda and has.
Mm-hmm. My Melody, Taylor's version, at Marvel Bimbo says, Nakia. She was my fave in the first Marvel Studios Black Panther film, and I hope she gets more screen time in Marvel Studios Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
I love Nakia. Yeah. She's fabulous in the films, played by Lupita Nyong'o, who's so talented. Next up, we got Gabby Fraga at Gabby_Fraga, who said, not from Wakanda, but from Marvel Studios' Black Panther Wakanda Forever. I have been waiting for Namor for 7 years, and I am dying to see how it turns out. Looks fantastic from Wakanda itself. I'll go with M'Baku. Dude looks fine as hell.
Gabby, we're respect. Here. We're with you. we agree on everything. I've been waiting, you know, 41 years for Namor to be on screen, and finally, we've got it.
I'm only 25, so.
J@Sleepy_Niffler says, I'm so excited to see Ironheart in the MCU. I've been reading her comics since her appearance in the trailer. So excited. Jay, that's amazing. That is exactly what we want to hear. You get excited about these characters, then you read the comics where they may have originated from. You get excited, go see the films, go see the series. Yes, yes, yes.
I love it. All right, we got an email here from Joe Hoffman. Joe, thank you so much for keeping us updated on all of the stuff that you're into, as well as all of the wonderful charity work that you've been doing. We love to see it. Thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. And he goes on to say, in answer to the question of the week, while there are a ton of cool characters in Wakanda like T'Challa, Shuri, and Killmonger, my favorite character from the various incarnations of Black Panther has to be Everett K. Ross, especially as written in the comics by the iconic Christopher Priest. And that's because I can relate to Ross the most. He goes on to talk a little bit more about that, but a fun and different pick. Everett's been there, kind of like, not from there, but kind of just like witnessing what's happening. A fun take on it, Joe.
Joe, thank you very much. Love that answer. Love all the answers, and we love y'all, but we gotta get going. This episode of This Week in Marvel is produced by Zachary Goldberg, Isabel Robertson, Lorraine Sink, and Ryan Penagos.
Our senior manager of audio production and development is Brad Barton.
Jill DeBoff is our director of audio.
Special thanks to everybody who voted in this week's election. Thank you for doing your civic duty. If not, answer to doom.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Lorraine.
This is Marvel.
Your universe. We're going to dissect the Marvel universe.